You know what that song means. When the bass drops, it's time for DLC, your downloadable content for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsor this week, Squarespace. Squarespace! They made that possible, bringing DLC to you completely free. DLC, of course, the show all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff 2N1T Kanata, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis. The guy who spent all weekend trying to explain to his dog and his daughter why explosion sounds aren't scary. Mr. Christian Spicer. Welcome, Christian.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. Happy no longer 4th of July.
Did you... I felt like the concussive nature of the explosions this year was unprecedented. I felt like it was so much more... It felt like bombs going off in my neighborhood rather than mere fireworks. Am I crazy?
I wasn't in your neighborhood. I wasn't invited to your party, apparently, so I don't know.
It was awesome. It was a fantastic party.
In my neighborhood... It wasn't bad. We were prepared. We have a little noisemaker in Estelle's, my daughter's room still, you know, that she sleeps with. So we turned it up to like preemptively. We were like, oh man, this is going to be a bad night. My dog's pretty good with it. But Estelle did not make a peep. We like, after really loud ones, we'd turn on the baby monitor and she was just on her back, you know, mouth agape, just out. Absolutely
wow.
Lights out.
You got lucky. That's great.
Yeah. It was very smooth.
I couldn't sleep through it. It was intense, man. DLC, of course, is your downloadable Kanata, your downloadable Christian. But this week, I'm very pleased to say that DLC stands for Director of Legends on Console, because we've got the game director of the upcoming Xbox One title, Fable Legends, Mr. David Eckelberry. Welcome, David.
Hi there, everyone. Thanks for having me on, Jeff.
It's our pleasure. I know people who listen to this show regularly heard me rave about Fable Legends coming out of E3. It was one of the big surprise games for me. I got hands-on with you behind closed doors there in E3, and I really was very impressed with the game. Tell us a little bit about Fable Legends.
Sure. So it was E3 was a pretty big deal for us. I had to get up on stage and all those sorts of things, something that I never really thought would be in my job description. The point of Fable Legends is for us to try something new, right? We're not exactly going back to making Fable 4, maybe someday, but we wanted to try something really different and experimental with the title. The studio had been working for a little while on different ideas, and they centered on the idea basically of doing a different kind of Fable game that was both cooperative and kind of competitive at the same time. So as you know, right now in games, this idea of asymmetrical play is really big. And so 2 years ago when we started this project, that's what we were going after, to be able to do four heroes against one villain player. The notion there was to take a different spin and a new spin on what Fable has done before on good versus evil. So now you'll have a choice of playing good or you know, sometimes selfish or, you know, as you like with our different heroes. Not all of them are especially heroic. But then there's this other role that we're taking on for one of our players, and that's the role of the villain. And the villain has a very different kind of gameplay experience. Unlike a traditional RPG, he's almost playing, you know, something that's almost reminiscent of an RTS. He's got a top-down view, and he controls all of the kind of creatures and traps and spells that the heroes have to fight against in real time. And he can interact with them, and it's a lot of back and forth, a lot of rock, paper, scissors kinds of relationships that the heroes and the villain goes through as they play together.
Yeah, you know, one of the news items that we have this week is the E3 awards, and Evolve was a game that kind of swept up and won a lot of big awards. But I keep telling people if they're excited about Evolve, they should be excited about Fable Legends, because it's very similar kind of idea. Instead of a big monster, the V1 player gets to play as this kind of omniscient villain character, which, as you just described. But it's very similar idea. You get to, you know, you get to be one versus four. It's a very cool concept, and the game looks really pretty. It's Unreal 4, right?
Yeah, we are using Unreal 4. We actually started, oddly enough, in the project right in the early days. We were with Unreal 3 because Unreal 4 just wasn't ready yet. So we did a lot of our early prototyping in Unreal 3 and then took it all over to Unreal 4. And yeah, that they, it's been a great engine for us. It allows us to make really beautiful looking stuff, and you know, the reaction to the look with our art director and everybody else has been great. So.
Is Unreal 4 the same engine that powers the hype train? Because if so...
one of the things I'm curious about, I think probably a lot of people listening are as well, is what a game director actually does. What is your job?
That's the polite way of saying, what you do, yo.
Yeah.
What you do, yo. So different studios use different titles. I mean, I could be called various things in my title, but from lead game designer to creative director to game director. My focus really is on making the game, right? So I work with everyone on the team, with engineers and great designers and animators. You know, my job is to make sure that it all comes together at the end of the day, right? So we do really early stuff where we're talking about concepts for a feature or for us a hero or creature to fight against. And then once I set the broad outlines of what we're going to build together, I leave it to the individual designers or artists to make that happen. And I come in to check in once in a while. But most of my job is about making sure that the forest is beautiful, or at least sculpted to be the game we want it to be, rather than going after individual trees. Mm-hmm. I still do a fair amount of stuff inside of Unreal, but most of it is honestly reviewing other people's work.
Go ahead, Christian.
I mean, piggybacking off of that, and I should have done a little more research, but there's an old interview of a Rare, of maybe current or former, someone that was at Rare at the time when they gave this interview, and it was how to get into the games industry, like, you know, what to do, what did you do to get in there? And this particular person said, you know, don't do what I did. When I got into it, you just started it. Now, there's no way I would hire me, because it's like, you know, people go to DigiPen or Art Center or wherever, like, so... From your perspective now, overhead, you know, being to some extent the big boss of this game, like, what would you look for, or what would you recommend someone to do if they ultimately want to be you, or, you know, be an art designer on a game or a project like this?
Sure. I have a similar feeling. You know, 20 years ago when I was getting started in games, I guess that means I'm old now. I didn't know what I was doing. Right. I'd just come out of university, and I didn't really know at all that I wanted to do games. You know, certainly not permanently. That my career has led me down. And I got started in games, oddly enough, I got started in the paper and board gaming side of things. So when I graduated from university, I was going to go to law school. But one of some friends I'd made said, "Why don't you come apply and join us at a company called TSR, most famous for Dungeons and Dragons?" Mm-hmm. And that's how I got my start in the industry. I'd been doing a lot of work for those guys, kind of freelance in magazines and writing adventures that was run at tournaments, kind of today's equivalent of mods, right? So I was doing the equivalent of what today would be spinning up Unreal or loading up a Warcraft 3 editor or whatever, and making my own levels that other people would then play. And that got me essentially in contact with the professional developers, and they eventually offered me a job. So even though I don't think my, you know, like, paper game to video games is the path I would probably advise someone in now, that kind of approach is still correct. When I'm looking to hire a new designer, especially design, not art, their portfolio matters still, and it matters for no matter what they're doing. So if you wanted to become a video game designer, if you want my job in a few years or 10 years, whatever, how young you are.
My cold, dead hands.
Yeah. Well, maybe not in 10 years, but I hope it's not dead hands. No, I mean, I would just start doing it, right? You know, there are so many ways between Unity and Unreal, and there are free engines that you can download today and start making stuff, right? A lot of people tell me when I tell them what I do for a living, you know, I make games for a living. They're like, cool, you sit around and play games all the time. You know, that's the standard kind of ha-ha response. And, you know, it's a little bit true. I play games a lot more than I would if I wasn't, you know, because it is part of my job to stay current and to play lots of games. That said, you know, I mean, how I play games is pretty different from how I used to play them when I was in college, right? I play them to take them apart, to find out why they made certain decisions, whether I ever talked to the developer behind it or just have to try to think through all the decisions they made along the way. It's kind of playing a little bit critic, and it's kind of playing to play analysis of why are they doing, what are the decisions they've made and why have they made them?
So
anyway, Sorry. Go ahead.
No. This is awesome. I mean, along those lines, are games still fun for you? Like, my equivalent is, you know, when I was little and I worked at a fast food restaurant in high school, like, I could never walk into that restaurant and see it the same. Or now, any comedy club I go into anywhere in the nation, I know that it's very different to me than it looks to an audience member that comes to comedy, you know, 10 times a year. Like, you know, Jeff's on set. It's like the ingredients that go into the sausage. So when you sit down to play a game, are you able to check out and just enjoy it? Or are you like, oh, sweet shaders, oh, interesting camera use, I like that lighting? Or is there still some of that whimsy and joy to the experience for you?
You know, the simplest answer of saying it is that really good games make me forget to be a game designer. Yeah, where, you know, cool. When I played Last of Us, or when I play a really great competitive game, where I'm involved in playing with my friends, whether that's, you know, League of Legends or a shooter or Hearthstone, whatever, I can forget and turn off and don't worry about the collectible mechanics of the game or whatever else. But your average game, when your brain starts turning on, you know, like you see something go wrong or a bug or something, you start to engage kind of that right brain and you lose the immersion, and then it's hard to get back to it.
So what are your favorite games of all time?
Planescape Torment, Star Control 2.
Yep.
Because I was such a hardcore player of it. EverQuest 1, the first MMO that I played a ton. I fell in love with that game, made a lot of great friends with it. And probably some version of Civilization, probably Civ 1, just because I spent absurd amounts of hours of it.
Well, I can tell that you and I could be best friends. Because
started off in board games. That's drops all of Jeff's favorite games. All right, I'm out. Thanks for your new co-host, Jeff. I'll go take over the leaf blowing duties. See you later.
Yeah, Twitter followers of mine that happened to see me tweeting this weekend some of the old game stuff that I found at my dad's house when I was visiting up there for 4th of July weekend will note that I gave Star Control 2 a 10 when I was reviewing it as a 14-year-old in the newspaper. So, yeah. One of
good
the
review.
Best games of all
good
time.
Review.
Yeah, thanks. All right. Well, it's good to know a little bit about you and what you do, but we have business that we need to do because we got to start the show with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, of course, the segment of the show where we try to convince each other of the most important stories that happened this week in the world of gaming. You, the listener, can submit stories for our consideration by using the hashtag DLCSOTW on Twitter or by using our subreddit at reddit.com/r/5x5DLC. Both of those avenues are available for you to submit stories for a Story of the Week. And you can also call in on this show if you're listening live. If you have a question for David or want to contribute to any part of the show, we will be taking calls at 512-518-5714. Again, 512-518-5714. And you can always call in any Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific time is when we record the show. So, David, tell me what you think the most important story was this week.
So my story of the week, if you don't know this, back in the land of paper gaming, they're about to release the next edition of Dungeons & Dragons.
Gen Con. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's sometimes called D&D Next, or they're just calling it, I think, Dungeons & Dragons, or D&D 5th Edition. It's probably known in the industry. And what made my social networking circle was a paragraph that is in Chapter 4 of the Quick Play Rules that I thought was really emblematic of where I hope gaming and even D&D culture has gotten to a better place. And I'm going to read you one little paragraph here.
Cool.
And what it says is... you can play a male or female character without gaining any special benefits or hindrances. Think about how your character does or does not conform to the broader cultural expectations of sex, gender, and sexual behavior. For example, a male drow cleric defies the traditional gender divisions of drow society, which could be a reason for your character to leave that society and come to the surface. You don't need to be confined to a binary notion of sex and gender. The elf god Corlan Larathian, I'm sorry, I'm bangling that pronunciation probably, is often seen as androgynous or hermaphroditic, for example, and some elves in the multiverse are made in Corlan's image. You could also play a female character who presents herself as a man who feels trapped in a female body, or a bearded female dwarf who hates being mistaken for a male. Likewise, your character's sexual orientation is for you to decide. From where D&D came from, you know, where they were actually different stats for men and women, and it was a fantasy environment, but like certain classes were kind of actually restricted, and to this, where I think that, you know, the game wants to be, I kind of wanted to give D&D some props for moving on.
That's fantastic, man. Gender issues is a big part of what happened in the gaming world this week, and we're going to talk about all of it. But yeah, it's wonderful to start in a real positive place with the way D&D is handling it with the next version of the rules. That is awesome. And I also like, not just from a gender politics perspective, but from a gameplay perspective, I like how the real thrust of D&D Next seems to be role-playing. It really is back to, I think that's a departure from 4th edition, which I think a lot of people complained was rules heavy and more like a board game and yep. less like, you know, imagination, a world of imagination.
I agree with that. I think even the things you see in the basic set where they're like which your personality traits and little trinkets you can own, they're definitely trying to interject more personality into it. And it's not just a MMO that has been reduced down to paper.
Right. Yeah. And you know, you see that with the sort of leeway that they're giving DMs in this rule set with allowing them to grant, I can't remember the terminology that they're using. It's advantage or something like that. You basically can grant an extra die roll based on pretty much anything that a player does that you deem to be worthy. So if they're making a really cool role-playing decision, you as the DM are empowered to say, to reward that basically and say, hey, that's a really cool outside the box way of approaching this. You get an extra die roll that you can choose to use or not, which is really cool.
Yeah, I like it too. I mean, I'm similar notions that, you know, I'm really liking this. I'm looking forward to playing with a group at work here at Lionhead.
Have you done any of the beta testing of it, or is this going to be?
Yeah, I've been a beta tester for a while for it. I guess more than a year. Mostly playing, you know, they released a lot of small packages of rules over the last couple of years. I haven't been great about sending those guys feedback through official channels. I sometimes talk to my former colleagues that are still there. But I've really enjoyed seeing the evolution of that. To me, they're trying to go a little bit backwards. You know, they're trying to advance the design, but they're also, I think, stepping back to make it more like 3rd edition and 1st edition.
Yeah. Were you one of the people that didn't really like 4th edition?
I liked it as like this brief snack size treat. But then whenever I tried to run campaigns with it, I was very quickly disappointed. I think the problem for me is just, you know, with 4th was that the spell book went away and the magic mm-hmm. item section mostly went away. And that was it, right? Kind of thing. That was kind of some of the best reasons to play that game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a double-edged sword for me because, I like the fact that you have, you have everything out in front of you, everything you can do at any given time you have out in front of you. And you never feel that. I always had that, that pain of, oh my gosh, this spell would be perfect, but I didn't put it in my spell book for this adventure. Or I didn't memorize it for today to do. And I never liked that feeling, but that's also part of the role-playing aspect of it, you know, so.
Sometimes yeah, I mean, you can't be the awesomely powerful Arc Wizard at first level. So.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what Dan Trachtenberg always referred to as the good suck. You know, it's like it sucks, but it's good that it's in there. It adds something.
It means your decisions mattered, right? So right. You decided to pick, you know, Magic Missile, and now you don't have Detect Magic or whatever the other one is.
Yeah. All right, Christian, what is your pick for Story of the Week?
So more information will be coming, it looks like, around Comic-Con, but Cliffy B, the real Cliffy B, not the fake Cliff. Cliff Bleszinski is getting back into gaming. I don't know if he ever said he retired, but he resigned from Epic in, I believe it was 2012, and his new company is called Boss Key, which he is partnering up with, I don't know how to say his name correctly, but hasn't stopped me before, Arjan Brucey, who I guess was the founder over at Guerrilla Games, and they worked on Jazz Jackrabbit together all those years ago. And all Cliff has been saying is that it's not going to be a Jazz Jackrabbit reboot. Epic owns that. But these are two dudes with some serious shooter chops behind them, getting together to create a new studio, and online investigators are digging. And it looks like they have some patents or whatever for, or have registered some stuff for, you know, downloadable stuff. So it looks obviously implying some form of online play or whatever. And also perhaps good news for people in the tough industry of video game making, Boss Key is hiring. So that could be a fun new place to look if you are unfortunately currently out of work or looking for something new to do. But I think anytime, you know, two people that made some of the bigger or more important or shinier, prettier games of the previous gen get together to make new games, I think that's a pretty big story.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your take on this, David?
I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I've never worked with Cliffy, but I've had a lot of respect for him. I certainly really enjoyed the Unreal first and then the Gears of War series. I don't know. I don't have any secret information about what project codename Blue Streak is. I'll be there at San Diego looking to find out, I guess.
Yeah, evidently back in 2013, Leszczynski was on a podcast and mentioned the idea that he wants to make a PC arena first-person shooter. Who knows if it's still that. That may have just been an offhanded remark that doesn't really reveal anything. But from my perspective, yeah, very excited. I'm not particularly keen on another arena shooter, but, you know, Titanfall's awesome. And if he brings something to the table in the same vein that game did, in the sense of, you know, really, you know, blowing things open and having mechs or whatever, like if it has its own unique take on arena shooting, certainly that could be very cool.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that's what makes it interesting, right, is when Modern Warfare came out, I don't think people were super jazzed for it. You know, there wasn't huge hype until people started getting hands-on with it in the beta launch, because it was Halo-dominated the console shooter space. And I know it's not an arena shooter, but it's like, what are they going to do? We don't need that. Oh, another shooter. But then when it came out and it kind of reinvented online multiplayer first-person shooters with perks and, you know, prestiging and all that weapon unlock and stuff, it was like, this is amazing. And then Titanfall, I feel like, made another half step along that way. So while no one is clamoring for this next thing, it's kind of like the Apple mantra where, you know, people don't know what they want. we're not going to ask them what they want. We're going to give it to them. And hopefully, I mean, I would love if that's what this is. It's like, oh, crap. Never. This is it. This is exactly it. Didn't know I wanted it. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited to see what it could be. And basically, by the time you're hearing this, there may be more information, actually. Supposedly, you know, it was going to be this coming week that he was going to start talking about what it is. So we may be talking about something that you know more about than we do. I think my story of the week has to be all of the gender politics issues that came up this week in the world of gaming. While it isn't a particularly positive story in a lot of ways, I think it's something we need to talk about. And it's true that here we are three white males on a podcast talking about this stuff. So, you know, we're not exactly a well-rounded group to be discussing it. But it nevertheless, I think, is something important. As David brought up with D&D, I think that as gaming becomes more widespread, more mainstream, and more popular, having it be more inclusive is going to be the key to making it succeed. And I think all of us are in favor of that. And so with that in mind, the two stories that were sort of hand in hand to bringing it to the fore this week in the world of gaming were the fact that there's this Finnish Hearthstone tournament that was separating out men and women in some sort of, I think, foolish attempt to try to emulate physical sports that have, you know, guys basketball and girls basketball. So they had a Hearthstone tournament that was only available to men, but they didn't have a women's side. It just wasn't available to women, which is sort of their first mistake. And because of the backlash after this kind of was released on Reddit and got some attention through the news outlets, they have backpedaled on that and opened up the tournament to women, which I think is a great move. And I'm so glad that they listened to the outcry. And I think more than that, it, you know, it points to this weird insecurity with esports of trying, I think, wrongheadedly to emulate real, quote unquote, real sports, and in order to try to gain some kind of sense of relevance. But I don't know. Let's, before we get to the second story, I'll just throw that out to the group. David, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I mean, part of me thinks they must have meant well. You know, I mean, I like to presume good intent among everyone. Mm-hmm. But you just look at this and you could see that, you know, they, like many stories, like they initially dug their heels in and tried to do some explaining, maybe even mansplaining.
Yeah.
But the backpedaling and the reversal here was pretty much inevitable as soon as the attention of the world came down on it. It's kind of dumb. Hopefully we just move past it is the only, and hopefully they move past. I think Hearthstone's a great game. I think running competitive tournaments is fine. When you have a thought of, hey, let's keep women out of this tournament, pause for a moment and go, really? Did I just say that? Is that our plan?
Right. Stupid. Also, I should mention this story was submitted by at @smack01 and at @siddarth0605 on Twitter using that hashtag DLCSOTW. Christian, you want to weigh in here?
I mean, before I was the father of a daughter, I would view myself as a feminist, and I think gender roles and gender equality is important, and more so now than before, because it's crazy that things like this are still happening. And I think to some extent our society, you think something is the way it is and because that's just the way it is, but you realize that it's been a learned idea that you have because of generations and generations of one particular group being in power and control. And whether or not it's intentional, it's people you know you give jobs to, people you know you hang out with. There's been studies about the innate racism of children, not because they're mean things, but just because they're surrounded by things that are like them and they're stranger danger and seeing something that's not like them they view as other and bad and whatever. But I think that we're at a place now where our society and our world isn't a hunter-gatherer society. It's not, you know, you need to be bigger, stronger, faster. The joke version of it that I've toyed around with before is that I want evolution to catch up to society. So instead of needing to like run and lift and eat lettuce to be healthy and live longer, I should be able to type 500 words a minute on a touchscreen phone, eat in my car while driving and texting and not getting in an accident. And like, those are the things that our society values now. And that's what we should do. It's like, oh man, I got to go work out. Yeah. I got to drive 20 miles in rush hour traffic and send 15 texts. It's going to be a long day. But like,
well, I mean, nerds and geeks are in, you know, I mean, I think in some sense I met my girlfriend through a geek play like that. So I think evolution may be helping us here. It's just a little bit slow to catch up.
That's right.
It's taking too long. We're not on our own little islands.
Nerds are the next evolutionary step. I think we've established that here.
Well, that's the old idea, right, of the common portrayal of aliens as being long, skinny fingers, big black eyes with pupils, a big brain, weak little bodies. We're just, video game players. But I think gender equality, and it's something that unfortunately we need to be conscious of because it is still a problem. It's not, in my opinion, we'll take care of itself. Just let it happen, man. I don't think that's right. I think we need to rectify it. And I'm glad that, you know, they got backlash for this tournament and
yeah,
I'm
let's
glad
get to that
they changed it.
Let's get to that second story too, because I think that was even the bigger firestorm that was going on. And these kind of served as a 1-2 punch of gender issues in gaming. And that was this hiring that happened at Giant Bomb, and more specifically the criticism of said hiring by some female contributors to the gaming space. Samantha Allen is one who is a podcaster for a video cast called Sore Thumbs and contributes to the Daily Dot and the Border House. And she came out pretty strongly criticizing the fact that Giant Bomb's recent hiring was just some white males of a certain age group, and that they had the opportunity to be more inclusive and not have that very, very large, widely viewed site be coming from one particular perspective. And she was pretty harsh in her criticism. And then there was a bunch of people online, a bunch of one assumes Giant Bomb fans who reacted real negatively to that. And she responded, badly back and forth. And it just kind of devolved into a shouting match that one person versus many people is never going to win. And she was harassed, and some awful, awful things were said to her on Twitter. And it really, I think it forced the hand, as it should, of Jeff Gerstmann and Patrick Klepek and the guys over at Giant Bomb. And they came out with, I thought, a pretty darn good statement, urging their community to stop being such a-holes. But I think the issue that I really want to talk about here is this idea of where some of these fans were coming from. And the biggest thing, I got into a bunch of Twitter discussions about this story, and the biggest
discussions, that's a nice way to put it.
Yeah. Well, I think most of the discussions that I got into were pretty civil, in contrast to a lot of the stuff I read, which was so depressing to me. But I think the big spark that people keep pointing back to is the idea that someone asked Samantha Allen, who is at Cousin Dangereau on Twitter, what if the men they hired were just the most qualified for the position? And she responded, go F yourself. And while, I don't think that was the best response that she could have made, I totally understand where she's coming from. And the idea that people kept coming back to me and saying, well, it's a legitimate question, I think it points a dramatic finger to her perspective and the perspective of a lot of underrepresented people in this industry to what the problem is. And that is the idea that there could be that could be a legitimate question, that there could be this weird idea of a most qualified person, and that one of the qualifications isn't to represent part of the audience that isn't currently represented on a site of the size and scope of Giant Bomb. Now, I recognize that I'm saying that on a show that is hosted by two white males and often comprises entirely of white males. But I also believe strongly, I mean, we don't have a staff that size. And, Giant Bomb can hire whom they want. I'm not criticizing them per se. I think the criticism voiced from the females saying, hey, why would you not want to have a large and growing segment of your audience represented on your site, I think is absolutely legitimate. And the backlash to her is sad and close-minded at best. So that's my perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I think I admire a lot of people in this industry. And one of those people that I admire the most from my interactions with him and reading things that he's written is Patrick Klepek. And after E3, where he was largely in charge of a lot of Giant Bomb's guests for, their live shows, he posted this thing about how he had received criticism for why there weren't more women or a more diverse cast on any of those shows. And, and I'm paraphrasing here, and I think you can go back and find his tweets. I'm certainly not trying to misrepresent anything he said, but this is off of memory. And, he said that kind of shook him, and he went and looked at it, and he recognized that it is, in fact, a problem. And it's something that he'd like to fix. But, while not a justification or excuse, I know for us for this show, Jeff, it's an unfortunate thing of you reach out to who you know, and because I think systems perpetuate themselves, you grew up with a group of people, then you know that group of people, then that group expands, and it takes more work to reach out and find people that you might not otherwise have daily contact with. And, stand-up gets the same criticism where it's like, oh, here's another white guy. And I do a show on Wednesday nights with Jess Lane and Barbara Gray, who are two fantastic comedians, and they're both really great about what we try to do with that show is put in the ground, put in the work to seek out people we otherwise might not know, because it's so easy to be comfortable and just constantly reach out to your friends that went to the same school, that therefore maybe not the same race as you or gender as you, but of the same class or, societal level as you, and not expand and get other viewpoints and views in. And I think it's so important to always be pushing yourself to look to see what else is out there and what other views are important, because I think oftentimes the views you don't agree with are the ones that you need to listen to because they make for an interesting discussion.
Yeah.
And, you know, the onus is on us as hosts of this show to reach out to and book more diverse people and to hire people along those lines. And it's something that I, you know, you and I have discussions off air, Jeff, and I think we're trying to do, and I know that sounds as an excuse, but, you know, we're trying to do that, and I take it seriously. Mm-hmm. It's a slow, difficult process. And if you are someone listening to this show that you feel your voice is unrepresented on it, please reach out to us. We are always looking for new people, new voices. One of the reasons we like about the call-ins, we are very open to it. So please let us know, and we'd love to have you come chat with us.
David,
I'll just add one thing to that. I think, you know, I do think it is sad, and the whole thing was just sad to watch play out over Twitter, the specific incident. But for me, I mean, I'm not going to say that it's excusable, but I understand why white men are overrepresented here, and it's going to take a lot more than just hand-wishing, or as you said, we have to be conscious about these choices we make, right? I look around when we were talking about earlier, I'm trying to hire another designer or programmer or whatever for our team. And so it is rare and difficult for us to find not qualified, not talented people, right? Not equally good people, but and this is going to sound weird here, so I'm fumbling through my words, but we get incredibly few and often zero female applicants for a job. Just none.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's, right? I mean, I can't bring people in for interviews unless they're applying, right? And when they do apply, they are outnumbered 20 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
What we do after that is obviously up to us, and we're bringing a lot of female candidates in. And mostly for what I discovered in the last several years is we have to hire up at a junior level because the industry hasn't been welcoming to women,
right?
Whether they're senior people or not senior people. And we drive a lot of women out of our industry.
Right. Yes.
Period. So it's, you know, my job now as a somewhat, you know, senior developer to bring women in and then to make sure, you know, that my team at the very least is treating them well and encouraging them to stay in the industry and to bring their friends in the industry.
Right.
So,
yeah. And that's the difficult thing is you can look around and say, well, you know, there isn't anybody at this level. And it's like, well, and there never will be, you know, if mm-hmm. if that continues. So there has to be an outreach. There has to be, as you said, you have to be conscious of it, and there has to be a way of encouraging and, you know, and it's gotta be hard for anybody to be the one in 20. And it's gotta be hard for anybody to enter the workplace and be the one in, you know, 20 or the one in 100 or whatever, yeah. And try to, you know, live in that culture and be in that culture. And I think we can all do better and do more. And I think from the gaming commentary side, when you have these sites and shows like ours that get around and talk about games and don't and only talk about them from one perspective, that doesn't do the audience any good. And as Christian said, we're going to redouble our efforts on this show to be more inclusive and invite people of differing opinions to be on the show. So. The real thing that is so disturbing to me is the level of vitriol that we see again and again in these kinds of situations, and the abuse that people have to endure, and the people, as I mentioned before, that claim to be coming at it from this perspective of it's a legitimate question. Why you got to be all upset? This is a legitimate question, and completely missing the point of what these people are saying. And, you know, it's such an offensive idea to say, well, maybe she just wasn't qualified. And I urge people to rethink that position because that seemed to be a lot of the sentiment from people. It's just like, hey, man, if she can't handle that kind of question, another thing was, oh, she's just mad she didn't get the job, which is ridiculous because she didn't even apply to this particular job. She was merely commenting on the situation at hand. So it's unfortunate. But I'll tell you what is fortunate. segue.
Transition. Let's just hold on. Let's just take a breath. Let's give it some time.
Give it a little. Think on that. It's fortunate that we're sponsored today by Squarespace. I love Squarespace, and I'm always so happy when they sponsor our show. Why? Because I use it every single day. If you go to jeffcanada.com, it's a site built on Squarespace, run on Squarespace, maintained on Squarespace. I have used Squarespace for years and years, and I rely on the stability and ease of use of Squarespace to make my blogging, make my personal website management possible. Squarespace, of course, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, or online store. They have templates that you can start with that you can then modify in a really easy way. It's all WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. It's all drag and drop. So you just drag a picture over, move a font, change this, slide it over here. Take that awesome, beautiful starting template and really make it your own. You'll notice that Squarespace sites like mine don't look like other sites on the web. They don't look cookie cutter. That's because the tools that Squarespace gives you are so easy to use, and the templates are so beautiful to start with, but you can make them your own. You can make them look really, really cool. They also have 24/7 support through live chat and email that if you have any questions, if you're running into problems at any step of the way, they're fast to get back to you and they're super helpful. It's also inexpensive. Plans start at $8 a month, and that includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. There's an online store feature that lets you even build in commerce to your site, and every site comes with that, even if you don't need it. You got it there should you expand, if your site expands and you want to add it at a later date. The best part, though, is that you can start a free trial with no credit card required. All you have to do is start building your site, fall in love with the tools. You'll want to give them a credit card. You'll want to sign up because it really is easy, but they don't require it. They let you just start building things without ever having to even input anything. There's no automatic bill you later if you don't cancel within 30 days or anything like that. It's great. So the way to check it out is to go to squarespace.com/DLC, start building your site, and use that promo code. That's super important. Use the promo code Jeff sent me. That'll get you 10% off your first purchase and show your support for DLC. So squarespace.com/DLC is where you go. And that promo code is Jeff sent me. It's super important. It shows Squarespace that it's a good idea to keep sponsoring our show, that you listen and you like it. So please do that. Jeff sent me, squarespace.com/DLC. Okay, guys, there's a few other stories here that I wanted to hit because they were submitted by users, including this one about, I'm very interested to hear David's take on this. This is the UK's Advertising Standards Authority came up with a ruling that said Dungeon Keeper, the quote unquote free to play version that EA released recently on mobile, wasn't free to play after all. They had a complaint filed by a consumer regarding a very specific ad that said the game is free to play, and the consumer said, hey, guess what? It isn't. I can't really play this game without spending in-game currency, and I can't get in-game currency without real human money. EA said, nope, we weren't really misleading anybody. It's free. You can download it. You can play for free. And the ASA reviewed the situation and said that we understand that several mechanisms within the game took a significant amount of time to be completed and that these would only be speeded up by using the premium gem currency, which costs real money. And players are likely to reach a position where they have to pay money to see any meaningful advancement. So they said, guess what, EA? You can't use that ad anymore that says it's free to play. This was submitted by @JimmyTheSaint82. David, what do you think about this?
You know, I have two completely different reactions to this. From a legal point of view, I think this is stupid, right? That I don't think we want the ASA or the UK's regulatory agencies really getting involved in deciding what language perfectly makes sense. But my other reaction to it is, yeah, F those guys, because it's a terrible game that deserves all the punishment it could get from us, from the fans, you know, from press, from players. You should not play this game. It's a really terrible game. And it's, you know, I'm annoyed by it because, and I'm just like, I'm annoyed by some of the stuff that, you know, from Zynga and everything else, because I think free to play could be great. And there are great free to play games, but every time we get a EA game like this or whatever, who cares who the publisher is, like Dungeon Keeper, I tried to play that game because I liked the old Dungeon Keeper, and that game was atrocious, right? It was kind of the worst example of free to playness. And that's obviously, the negative press is clearly what attracted the ASA's attention, you know, and you reap what you sow.
Yeah. Yeah, it sucks too, because Dungeon Keeper is such an awesome game back in the day, and to have it tarnished like this by this stuff. And I don't know where that puts us with free to play. I mean, it's such a slippery slope because there's such fantastic free to play games. I mean, League of Legends and Dota are great examples, and there are lots of companies doing awesome stuff in that, with that business plan, but it's so abused by so many companies as well. Have you, as a designer, ever had a conflict there? Have you thought about doing free to play? Is that something that you've wrestled with?
Sure, absolutely. So back in my history, I worked on D&D Online and Lord of the Rings Online. Mm-hmm. And ironically, when I left Turbine and Warner Brothers behind, that's when they were in the process of converting those titles to free to play. I didn't leave because they were doing that. I left just because I got an interesting job offer in California. It's not a moral play to me. You can have great free to play games. Hearthstone's a great example, as somebody just said in the chat room.
Yeah.
It's all about respecting your audience and not being a money grubbing a-hole, right?
Yeah.
And there are great free-to-play, and this is going to continue to exist. There's going to be great free-to-play games out there. There's going to be people who get enough funding to make a terrible free-to-play game that is as extortionist as it can be. I don't see that changing. Listen up, pay attention, play the good games, ignore the other ones, guys.
Yeah, sort of up to the consumer is your perspective of to be, you know, you can recognize when a game starts being exploitive to you, I think.
Yeah, I mean, well, I just... I've read several books about that kind of design in the past, years ago, and you do need a sense of morality to it. I mean, I think that if someone gives you a fair amount of money to play your game, whether it's whether it's free to play or a $60 box, it's your job to give them a fair return back. And I think most people who are working in the industry, they know when they're doing it or not, and they can choose to sleep well or not afterward.
Yeah, Christian, you want to say something?
You know, I mean, I think it's first, David, as a currently continually reformed attorney, your friends did right by you by talking you out of it all those years ago.
Thank you.
But it's that issue of, like, not necessarily the legal definition, but the term and then the layman's understanding of it. You know, so in the legal world, it's like, oh, they murdered someone. How could they not be convicted for murder? Well, murder is a very specific thing that has a legal definition of criteria that must be met for it to be murder. Didn't mean that that person did not kill someone, but, you know, legally they did not murder them. And like in free to play, you know, what is that line? Is that a word that needs to have not necessarily a legal definition, but a, you know, maybe it's just even on like urban dictionary definition of what it means? Because like when Ouya was launching, you know, they were like, in every game will be free to play, which they just meant has a free demo, right? Which like meant that every game under their definition of it, every Xbox 360 indie game or, you know, whatever Xbox Live Arcade game was free to play under that. And that, I don't think, isn't what the term has come to mean. And so when a game like Dungeon Keeper says it's free to play, you know, could I release, you know, let's say Shovel Knight comes out and they don't call it a demo or whatever, it's the first three levels or up to the first night or up to the first town you can play for free, but after that you need to pay to unlock the full game. Is that free to play? And I think because, you know, the industry itself to some extent is still very young, but this free to play, I mean, it's the Wild West, right? Like Doc Holliday is going to come out and it's Tombstone and everyone's trying to stake their turf and define what things are. And then the devious side of that coin is, and people are trying to take as much money as possible and run away with it. Much often like the Wild West too, where it's like, this is mine, yeehaw, bing, 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 and then you run away.
I think you're pretty moving further. That's why you're a history major, Christian. That's exactly how it works.
Exactly. But you know, what is that word? And I mean, Jeff, do you have a definition of free to play? What is your define free to play in, you know, 200 words or less?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's a difficult thing, right? It's a sliding scale. And I think that as most people come to expect, it is the entire game available to you to play. But parts of the game, things that happen inside the game, you pay for. I think that's, you know, and I think most of us prefer free to play to constitute cosmetic items, frivolous things that don't impact whether you quote unquote win or lose. But you know, it's a sliding scale, and I think as we're going to figure it out, and hopefully as the audience gets more savvy, these more manipulative things will be fewer and farther between. Although, you know, you see the massive success of something like Candy Crush or what have you, it's hard not to think that there'll be lots more of those kinds of things too.
I do think the audience is getting more sophisticated, right? I mean, Zynga's stock is where it is for a reason, right?
Yeah.
Relative to where it was supposed to be or projected to be and those sorts of things. And
yeah.
I think, you know, the rats leaving that ship is its own kind of telling thing.
Fool me once.
So I think the audience is learning. You get immunized against the kind of psychological tricks that a lot of free-to-play companies are doing after a while.
Yeah. A couple other stories I just want to hit on real quick, just because they were submitted. We had at Clever Juice submitted the fact that PS4 DualShock 4 works wirelessly with PS3. I think we can all agree that's
kind
an
of.
Awesome thing. Yeah, it's a little spotty, but I love the fact that they're doing that. I think that's cool.
Yep.
And this story has me intrigued, just because I don't know if you guys had a chance to watch the little video, but evidently Mario Kart 8 has been hacked. This was submitted on the subreddit by HyperApathy. The video is hilarious because it's just a Twitch stream, and it starts with this, you know, offstage, unseen voice saying, "I am now in complete control of this Wii U. All its secrets are mine," which is pretty hilarious. So evidently, this Mr. Bean 3500 VR, who's a big Mario Kart speedrunner, was demoing this fact that these guys have figured out how to use a browser hack to get into Mario Kart 8 and mess with stuff. They were renaming tracks and putting in different audio things, and they're hoping that it leads to some user-created tracks and edits in the game. But of course, everybody else is scared. It just basically means the end of competitive Mario Kart 8 because now everyone can cheat. So, double-edged sword there. David, how do you feel about this as a guy whose games could potentially be hacked? How do you feel?
Competitive Mario Kart 8 was my first funny reaction to that, right? I mean, it's such a game that I played casually, but I'm not desperately worried about some small percentage of the world having, you know, some kind of hacked client or something. It just doesn't happen.
Okay.
You know, I think that modding is going to be out there, right? And it's always been out there. And if you tell someone something can't be hacked and say that publicly, now you're just, that's just a dare in the world we live in.
Christian, any thoughts?
No, I mean, nothing has been covered. It's,
All right.
Sorry.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Interesting, but covered.
Good stuff this week. Thanks to everybody who submitted stories. Let's move on to the playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. David, what's on your playlist this week?
You know, I played a scattering of things. I think most of it was spent in AAA time, playing through Wolfenstein on my Xbox One, and really having a blast with that. Right, I had two games that I bought right around the same time 2 weeks ago, Watch Dogs and Wolfenstein, and I expected to spend a lot more time in Watch Dogs, and probably eventually I will. But I started playing Watch Dogs, and it is that Ubisoft thing, right? So I got to somewhere 30 minutes into the game. It asked me to pull up the map, and it showed me 50 different side missions I could be doing right now.
Yeah.
And I was like, thanks for the pacing moment, guys. it just stopped me so cold in my tracks where I was like, wow, I can just see the next 30 to 60 hours of my life laid out in front of me. And I did a couple of the missions. One of them, you know, a racing kind of mission, getaway on a car, and that didn't go so well. And it kind of really left me cold. It's just like, I don't want to be just doing these side missions for so many hours. So I started ignoring them and going for the main mission. But then I kind of was left with this itchy, scratchy feeling in the back of my brain of like, I'm neglecting to play the game, and I'm, I don't know. So Wolfenstein was this simple palate cleanser for me where I kill Nazis. I play through linear levels, and sure, there are collectibles and other random bits of junk along the way, but I kill Nazis. I have cool guns, and I blow up Nazis, and I'm having a blast playing it.
How deep into it are you, hours or gameplay-wise?
I think I'm a little over halfway. I think around 8 hours-ish in, I would guess.
Okay, yeah. I loved that game. I will continue to sing its praises. I think it was like $25 or $29 on the Steam sale here for a while. I do think it will be cheap if, you know, listeners haven't picked it up. I think you will likely be able to get it here fairly cheaply towards the end of the summer. But yeah, if you're looking for something to play, I think it's a really smart, straightforward shooter, if that makes sense. The way, you know, BJ is this character out of time, both yep. in terms of literally and in modern shooters. And yeah, I don't know. I really enjoyed every game that team has kind of made, right? Going back to Riddick and then Darkness, I think was a lot of fun. And my only real complaint is that I wish like the auto shotgun had a little more oomph to it, but I was pretty satisfied.
Well, I'm not disappointed at all. The only thing I'll say is I really hope it does well, because in the previous generation, as you mentioned, kind of Darkness and some of the titles they've done in, that kind of falls into a place that really worries me in AAA gaming right now, because we have our giant Call of Duties, right? And we have online PC games, whether it's League or whatever, they're very successful right now. But a lot of the promise that was going on the 360 and the diversity of titles, I worry about the cost of next-gen games. Do B titles, and that's not meant to be an insult, B-plus titles, A-minus titles, things that only cost tens of millions of dollars instead of hundreds of millions
right.
of dollars.
Right.
Can those games succeed in the crowded environment we have when costs are going up so high? I really want Wolfenstein to succeed, so I was happy to give them my $60.
Yeah, I got to play more of that. I got sidetracked with WildStar, but it's definitely a game that I was enjoying, and I got to get back to something.
So I have
Go ahead.
I was going to say I have one more game for you.
Yeah.
In my what's been playing. I know Jeff, you went to see, or as a Christian, you went to see Transformers, so that none of us had to.
Yeah, that was the bullet I took for the world, and so few people took me up on that.
I know, 300 million and growing in gross sales or something.
Yeah.
So I felt it was my obligation to try on not one, but two Transformers games.
Oh, man.
And so I played Transformers on console, Darkspark, and I played Transformers Universe, which went into open beta over the weekend.
Okay, so are they better than the movie? I hope.
No, I didn't see the movie. You told me not to.
Right, well, okay. Are they any good is what maybe I should
no.
get. Well... That's
no.
Neither one.
No.
Darkspark makes me sad, too, because I feel like the other two had potential, and then that entire team basically got laid off, and I feel like Darkspark was just old assets. I haven't played it, but from Let's Plays that I've watched, I feel like it was just old assets that they had lying around for those games, and then they worked in a time travel mechanic to justify why they're using their back
old assets.
Yeah, and it's just like, what are you doing?
Honestly, there's something kind of comforting about that, in the sense that I don't have to explain to people, well, you know, the Transformers video games are actually pretty good if you just don't watch the movie. Now I can just say, hey, if it has Transformers on it, avoid it like the plague.
Yeah, I mean, I could tell you a little bit more about it. It's really slow. It's really ugly. It's, you know, just not fun to play. The only thing they have is a kind of matchmaking mode that, you know, is like a 4v4 TDM kind of match. You wait around like in World of Tanks for your Transformer to be repaired. The prices they've recently increased inside the, you know, even inside of their beta, and they're kind of absurd for a game that's just not, that doesn't justify the kind of expense in this free to play game.
Well, public service announcement, everybody, don't go see the movie. Don't play the game. I was very bad host last week and didn't get to any calls, so I want to get to one right now. I have somebody on the line from the 904 area code. You're on. What's your name? Where are you calling from? And what's on your playlist this week?
My name's Tim. I'm from Florida. I've actually had three games on my rotation this week. I've been playing some Mario Kart 8. I've been playing some Shovel Knight. And thanks to Christian talking about some retro games last week, I've actually been playing some Splatterhouse on my TurboGrafx.
Oh, on your TurboGrafx 16?
Absolutely.
Wow. That is a throwback to a game, Splatterhouse. Man, oh man, it was almost banned because it was just too violent and the pixels were so bloody. Have you been digging on Shovel Knight? Tell us a little bit about your experience playing Shovel Knight.
It was actually it was really good. The end, kind of the last three nights, I guess you would say, they're a little tough. But the game overall is pretty good. I like it.
Cool. I know, Christian, you've been playing that game as well, right? You've been...
Yeah, I am one fight away from the end. It was on my to-do list last night, and then last night spiraled out of control on me. I love that game so much. It's the perfect mix of it feels like a full-on retro game, but it's with smart enough updates that, you know, modernizations, tweaks to the formula that make it more enjoyable to play than, say, you know, don't get me wrong, I love Mega Man 1, but playing that game in one sit down is not how I want to spend my time anymore. It's great. And I love, man, Splatterhouse, what a great throwback, right? The pixels in that game were so big before, the characters on screen were so huge. It was like that and Bonk were what my friends that, you know, made the dumb choice and got TurboGrafx would try to justify it with. And it was like, look at this. And when you'd hit them and they'd come flying towards the screen and smash on the screen. Oh, man, I don't have any nostalgia for the gameplay, but man, sleepovers and watching that game, that was awesome.
You only could play them at sleepovers, right? Because your mom wouldn't let you play it by yourself. You couldn't actually have that game. You couldn't get TurboGrafx 16, probably.
Right. I mean, I wasn't stupid. You know what I mean? No offense to, you know, just kidding. No, I did not own a TurboGrafx, but Michael Marcolisi, shout out, one of my good friends in elementary school had one, and it was awesome. So much fun.
Well, I was traveling this week. I went up to my family's house for 4th of July weekend, which gave me an opportunity to play Civ Rev 2, Civilization Revolution 2, just got released on the iPad. And man, I love me some Civilization. And Civilization Revolution, the first one back on the Xbox, I think it was the 360. Yeah, the Xbox 360. It was my game of the year that year. It simplified Civ down to a really manageable, fun console experience. It had cool controls on the controller. I thought they did a great job making it streamlined and easy and accessible. And I think they've done a similar thing here, bringing that kind of simplified version of Civ onto the iPad. It's beautiful. The game looks really great. It really streamlines things to the point where it feeds you things that you could be doing next. Like your advisors are really, really chatty and offer up stuff. You don't have to just go to them to consult to find out what to do. And the maps themselves, at least the couple that I've played so far, are pretty small. And so it makes for a more concentrated game experience. But it's Civ, and it's still really, really fun. It's still just one more turn. I still was staying up late at night past my bedtime because I just wanted to do one more turn. And the controls are fantastic on the iPad. The touch to move, touch to, you know, all the menus are super accessible and easy to get to. It's a fantastic implementation, and I'm really digging it.
I'm going to have to pick that up. I really love Civ Rev as well. From a pure game design point of view, I in some ways thought it was better than the PC Civs. It's kind of heretical to say that, I know, but the PC Civs were great simulations, but Civ Rev was like a better game.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. Like you said, a lot of people gave me flack for saying that at the time, but I thought, man, it kind of trims the fat in really good ways. As much as I love the complexity and density of the mainline Civ games, it really made it easier to jump in and not feel like, okay, well, let's figure this all out.
And especially like by the end of Civ, you're dealing with so many cities, yeah, and so many thousands of units, it feels like that exhaustion sets right in, and that doesn't happen in these kind of revisions of the game.
Yeah, I think it's one of the only Xbox 360 games where I got a 1,000 gamer score on it because I played the crap out of it. So I will probably, between Civ Rev 2, Hearthstone, and FTL, I think those are the only iPad games I need. I can be perfectly happy for the rest of time with my iPad. The other game I wanted to, a couple other games I wanted to bring up, but one of which is a game that I wasn't able to talk about until July 1st, and since our episode came out the day after that, I wasn't able to talk about it last week. But it's a game I get to play at E3, and it was announced on the 1st. It's Witcher Battle Arena, which is the Witcher franchise doing a MOBA. On the face of it, sounds like a pretty terrible idea to me, but it's a really interesting take. It's a mobile version of a MOBA, a mobile MOBA, and they have done some really smart things in a similar way that Civ Rev has. They've done some really smart things in making the MOBA experience compressed into just a few minutes. Like, most of the matches in this Witcher Battle Arena are like 4 or 5 minutes long, which is pretty cool to be able to deliver the full MOBA experience that fast. And the controls actually work. I mean, we were playing on iPad minis at E3, and it worked pretty well. You were able to select your spells, level up, do all the, you know, move your guy around, do all the things with a touch screen that you would do with a mouse and keyboard on PC, and do it fast, do it effectively. I never felt like I was out of control or disadvantaged because I was doing it that way. I don't know how many people are clamoring for a mobile version of a 5-minute MOBA, but if you are, this is a pretty darn good thing to do. And I kind of like the fact, as much of a Witcher fan as I am, and as much as I'm excited about Witcher 3, I like the fact that they seem to be investing into this universe so that it seems like it will exist far beyond just the next sequel for that game. So I have high hopes. I'm not into MOBAs enough to be really salivating for it, and I don't know how many people have such an addiction to MOBAs that they need it in 5-minute increments while they're on the go. But
yeah,
MOBAs are interesting to me too. Go ahead. Sorry, Christian.
Oh yeah, no worries. I mean, I think it's interesting, right? Because I feel like anytime someone makes a MOBA, they get flack for, oh, jumping on the MOBA bandwagon. Look, they're just making another league, another Dota. Great. I mean, at least with this, I feel like they are trying to do something different. You know, it is on mobile, a shorter game, game length to run through a game. So if there is, I don't know if people are looking for that niche to be filled, but if so, I think it's an interesting approach versus just here's DC does a MOBA. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I do think, though, that that's what is happening in MOBA space. I mean, you guys are old enough. Like, I remember, you know, we had card games like Magic the Gathering, and then every IP had to make a card game.
Right.
And then we had MMOs, right? So every IP, had to make an MMO.
Right.
Now every IP from like DC to Lord of the Rings to whatever, you name it, has to get a MOBA made.
Yeah.
And most of them are going to crash and burn, but that's why people have this reaction, I think, that they just know that there's a lot of Me Too-ism going on.
Yeah, it happened in fighting games. It happened in first-person shooters. It was like, you know, it's the game du jour. But that doesn't necessarily mean these games won't be fun.
No, they can be good. Yeah. It's just going to be hard for them all to survive.
I agree. Yeah, and I feel like, especially with Blizzard getting into the mix now, and you've already got these two giant pillars of the MOBA, you know, League of Legends and Dota, it's like, how... those communities are so robust and so well supported by those companies. Who would want to jump into that space? It feels like you're destined to fail. But you know, maybe mobile is the differentiator here. The one last thing I'll bring up. I will talk more about it next week because I've just started playing it. But I already think it might be my favorite thing. I'm like, I feel the tingle of addiction happening. And
wait a minute. The new thing you just played only for a little bit is your current favorite thing?
I see the hooks happening. Okay. So here's what you know about me, right, Christian? Here's what you know about me as a gamer. I love role-playing games are my favorite genre. I love isometric as a perspective. It's my favorite perspective. And I love turn-based, right? I love turn-based games.
Uh-oh. Divinity Original Sin coming in.
Yep. You nailed it. And my favorite game of all time is Ultima 7. So Divinity Original Sin feels like if someone were to make Ultima 7 now using our technology, that's what it would be. And I just started playing it. It's relatively new. Garnet and I were going back and forth because I think he's gotten a little farther than I am, and he has some complaints. So I'm leaving room for potential complaints later, but initial impression is, holy crap, this might be a game that's made for me, and I'm going to fall deeply madly in love with it. It is a top-down isometric role-playing game, super dense, super giant world, super deep systems of role playing where all your decisions are tracked and mapped. So every single, even like dialogue choice you make, it'll say +1 to pragmatism or +1 to loyalty, or, you know, you're crafting characters in the way old school role playing games used to, and the amazing, wonderful turn-based battle system. So when you get into a battle, you control your party. You have action points that you get to spend. Initiative is based on, you know, your initiative roll. And so you see a bar at the top, sort of like Grandia 2 used to do, which is another one of my favorite games ever, that shows the order in which all the monsters and you, your characters, are going to fight. And you have to plan out how you're going to use your spells. You can get more people into your party. There's tons of story. This world is really big and really well detailed, and just wandering into towns and wandering through people's lives is super fascinating and fun for me. I'm so excited to play more of that this week. It's actually usurped WildStar for me, of like, oh, okay, I think I might have to jump both feet into Divinity Original Sin. And as a Planescape Torment guy, you should be playing this, David.
I actually just started it yesterday, about only 2 hours in or something. But I saw some friends talking about it. I had a bug, so I do, you know, where I got caught in a kind of, remember the first town when you walk up to the first big town, mm-hmm. right? The city, the only city I've reached. You have that fight with a whole bunch of orcs running off of a ship, right? And a whole bunch of guys that are supposed to the right are supposed to join you in that fight, because otherwise you just get your butt clocked.
Mm-hmm. They didn't.
They didn't. They did not join me in that fight, and I was like, "Wow, this is really hard."
Oh man,
game.
That sucks.
And so I on my third low through, somehow I moved to the right, hit the right trigger for the script or whatever, and it worked. And that was a great relief, because I thought I'd stumbled onto the hardest turn based combat game ever.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Well, hopefully there won't be many more of those kinds of bugs. But I mean, it's got the kinds of deep simulation stuff where you can combine, if there's some fire, you can put water out on it, or you can, if there's poison, you can light it on fire. If there's oil on the ground, you can light it on fire, or freeze things, and you're able to manipulate the environment. You can pull things from one space to another and set them on things. Or, you know, if there's an explosive barrel, you can throw it into the fire, or pull a candle off the wall and use that to ignite something. It just feels like such a dense world that allows for all these kind of, you know, emergent gameplay elements.
I agree. I mean, it started a little slow for me, but I think that you really deserve to experiment with all of those crazy, kooky options, right? And the character creation stuff, too, was pretty interesting, right? The different character classes you can choose to play. The fact that you're always playing, I don't know if you mentioned this one yet, that two characters simultaneously is a really interesting place to take game design, actually.
Yeah, and I think you can add more party members to your party. And the cool thing is that their portraits are in your upper left corner of the screen, and they're linked by a chain so that when you move one, the other one follows. But you can unlink that chain and move them around strategically should you choose as well. So, you know, the most rudimentary version of that is that if there's two pressure plates that need to be stepped on to open a door, you know, you can unlink them and have one step on one and one step on the other. But it can get much more complicated than that, because you can, you know, think of ways to place an archer up on a hill to shoot down while your fighter can run in and attack. And it's got all kinds of ramifications that are really interesting. And the writing is very strong as well. It reminds me of all those old games that lived and died by their writing and their fantasy world. I mean, it very much feels like, I mean, down to the fact that when you open a container, it's got this cool Ultima 7 container box that shows the slots in it, but the border is the shape of the container. I mean, it just made me geek out because I love that game so, so much. But
can you enter a cheat code and replace all the nouns with butt? Because if not, I'm not interested.
You're talking about the Shovel Knight butt code.
Shovel Knight cheat.
So but we see a game that was made for me, and we see a game that was made for you with the butt code.
I mean, the natural transition there that, you know, I travel a decent amount, whatever, and playing games. And David, I saw on games that you were playing is a Telltale game. And I think what's interesting for me, Jeff, you were saying, you know, your perfect game is this game right now. It looks like they've hit all the checkboxes. And for me, a perfect game, you know, I have two types, right? There's like the action. I love God of War and whatever. But when the first Walking Dead Telltale games came out, I was like, this is it. This is amazing. This is story. It's enough to keep me on my toes. It's me invested as this character and making these choices. And I don't know if I'm alone in this, but I don't see people talking about either The Wolf Among Us, which has good reviews, or Walking Dead Season 2 nearly as much as Season 1, right? When Season 1 came out, I mean, it was the toast of the town and Game of the Year awards, and I think it was my Game of the Year that year. And I find myself, I went back into it. I haven't finished Episode 2 yet. I bought the Season Pass of Season 2 when it came out. And I was wondering, you know, have you touched Season 2 at all, Jeff? Or have you played The Wolf Among Us? Or David, when you're diving into these games, are you as compelled into them as you were before, or am I alone in this island that thinks that for whatever reason I'm just not as into them this time?
Go ahead, David.
Okay, yeah, sure. So I think the problem, I'm really enjoying Wolf Among Us and I'm really into it. I had to catch up this past weekend because tomorrow, props out to Telltale, the last episode comes out actually. So I wanted to catch up. I really enjoy that game. I think the reason that it gets a little less attention and the fact that season two got less attention is just the novelty, right? It has started to wear off that, mm-hmm. right? The Walking Dead was this incredibly different kind of game that we hadn't seen for a while. And so the fact that there's another season of it isn't as newsworthy, for one. And for two, bluntly, I'm just Walking Dead it out. I'm zombied out. Yeah. And so I didn't really have a strong desire to play season two. I'm kind of zombied out of the TV show, and I didn't really have a strong desire to keep going with the game.
Yeah, I played the first episode of season two and got to the end and was really digging it as usual. And then kind of felt like, well, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and let all of the rest of them come out before I pick this back up. As much as episodic is cool, it's also really cool to play them all back to back and get that story all in one chunk and, you know, that not have to have those cliffhangers feel like cliffhangers. You know, it's like watching the season of TV back to back is kind of my preferred method at this point. So I don't know. It's not that I don't love them as much, but I do agree that the novelty has worn off and it doesn't feel as revolutionary as it did in season one.
One last thing to say on that, you know, we were talking about the really good writing in Divinity. I think that it's really cool to me that writing is playing such a great part of this resurgence in these kind of games, or whether it's Divinity or all the Walking Dead games and Wolf Among Us and soon apparently Game of Thrones, right, version of it. Those are all centered on the power of well-written words, and that's awesome.
Yeah, for sure. Totally agree. Got another person on the line here. I wanted to hear what there is on their playlist. So 903, you are on the line. What's your name? Where are you calling from? And what's on your playlist this week?
Hello, I am Nathan in Dallas, Texas. And I have been playing a few things. I've done Shovel Knight a little bit. I've just finished Valiant Hearts. I don't know if either of you guys have played through that. But
Christian hated it at E3.
I really enjoyed what I've played of it.
So tell us why it's good.
I was surprised at how they were able to sell the more dramatic and serious parts of a really grim war with that art direction. I was really worried that it would be very goofy and sort of undermining the drama of that setting, but When it does have those points where it really pulls on your heartstrings, it does it really successfully. And it's been enough to motivate me to keep playing through it. So that's been really interesting.
Very cool. I think that's another example of writing in game and context and conveying a really cool story. What were you going to say, Christian?
I'm super glad Nathan called in with that because, one, we met up at E3, Nathan. I think you might have been standing next to me when I played when I played the demo. Maybe that was a different day. I forget what day we were show floor buddies. But this game is getting great reviews, and I need to play it. I just can't shake. And I know it's stupid. I mean, I hear it's amazing, and I hear it'll be right up my alley, but some games just don't demo well at E3, right? Like, it's not the type of game that you want to be on the show floor to play while a 2 feet away from you is a girl in a skirt with Nintendo 3DS is strapped to her body, or, you know, behind you is Evolve Twitch announcement going on. And meanwhile, I'm playing as a nurse saving people's lives in an adventure game. I thought the slices they showed at E3 didn't obviously do the game justice. Its reviews are through the roof, and not saying that reviews are all you go off of, but people that I know and respect really, really dug the game. I think it has a great story to tell and an emotional one as well. So I'm glad, Nathan, that you're having a good time with it. And I think I'm glad you re-brought up the game because I have not touched it yet. I just haven't had time at home in my console. Jeff, you had mentioned maybe picking it up. Is it a game that you've gotten around
to?
No,
I haven't. Yeah, it's, you know, for the quote-unquote lull of the summer with no big releases, I certainly have a lot of games to play. There's no shortage. I mean, it doesn't help that I, you know, have an MMO that I'm still playing. and now Divinity is like this massive, you know, 100-hour investment also. So those are the two that are sort of the top of my list. And then, of course, I play my daily Hearthstone matches that I can't stop, and I've got Civ Rev for when I'm on the go.
And we each do like 10 podcasts.
Yeah. But I do, I'm curious to play it. I would like to play it. It does look, it's the kind of game you want to reward. That's sort of different, interesting, sort of more ambitious in the sense of context and content. So maybe I'll get around to it. I hope so. Speaking of getting around to things, let's get around to tabletop time.
Right now.
So excited to have David on the show because you come from tabletop gaming, or a tabletop gamer still, and you've played a game that I've heard really great things about and I have not played. So I'm curious to hear you talk about Chaos in the Old World.
Yeah, it's not a super new game, but I got the chance to play it for, I think, the second time at work last week. We have a board gaming group at work, and we play sometimes at lunch and sometimes in the evenings, mainly for the longer kind of games. And Chaos in the Old World is a really cool game. The thing I really like about it is you're all four different gods, and that you're kind of like these Cthulhu-esque gods from the world of Warhammer, if you're familiar with that kind of universe. So there's a plague god and a blood god and all this cool stuff, and like a seduction kind of god. And I don't remember all their names. Warhammer is not my number one kind of go-to IP.
They're all nasty.
But it's really fun because, but it's really quite fun because everyone has a different goal to win the game. Like, everyone has different powers, and they have different kinds of units that are each kind of unique on the board. So it's asymmetrical gameplay, which is something that has always fascinated me. And, you know, you can go back to D&D or board games and everything, all that kind of different kinds of asymmetrical play. And so it's a game that I really fell in love with. We're going to play it again next week.
Yeah, man. I heard about this game. There is a, I'm trying to find it now. I should have looked it up earlier, but on Board Game Geek, there is a, in the Geek Videos section for Chaos in the Old World, there's a video by Robert Florence that is one of the great board gaming videos of all time, as far as I'm concerned. I urge people to go check it out. It's him gushing about this game with his thick Scottish brogue, and it made me want to play it because he's like, you get to kill people and you'll get to do things and it's great. And oh my God, he's just like, he's hilarious anyway. And so I urge people to check that out. So this is a game that's been on my radar for a long time. I haven't been able to play it, but yeah, you get to do like, there's constantly pressure on you, right? Because these, the forces are amassing and moving about the board, but you get to use the powers of these crazy gods, as far as I understand. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely have different powers, but the enemy forces are more or less your other players, right? It's a grown up and more interesting game of Risk in some ways, where you have different kinds of units and you can attack each other and claim territory. But the real thing you're doing is you're desecrating the world, right? So you fight over things and you make the world worse until the world like basically ends it cataclysmically. And some god gets credit for blowing up the world. That's your objective in the game.
That's awesome. So that's Chaos in the Old World. Yeah, you should check that out. I definitely want to play it. This weekend I was up, as I mentioned several times now, up in the Bay Area with my family. And one of the games that I brought out, first of all, my nephews, I played a ton of War with, which is barely a game. You know, it's the old card game where you just flip a card over and whichever one's higher, that person takes it. So that was mind-numbing. But it's the good news about that game is it's a game that if you step away from, you're five-year-old nephew can keep playing without you. He just flips your card over and he keeps going. Then he reports to you what happened. Oh, you won. Oh, that's awesome. For the adults, I played Puerto Rico, which is a game that I realize I don't think I've ever mentioned on this show. It's a stalwart, one of the best games ever made. And it's one that I often bring out to people that are sort of ready to make that next step from Settlers of Catan or something, or, you know, an introductory game. This is sort of that next step game. And it's a game where you're literally populating the islands of Puerto Rico, and you are planting crops and you are harvesting those crops and shipping them off to make money and score points. And the main mechanic of the game is this thing called role selection, which means that there are certain roles, and when it's your turn, you get to select which role to do that turn. So you'll do only the action of that role. But the cool thing is you select that role, but then everybody else gets to do that action as well because you selected it. You get a special bonus because you selected it, but everybody else gets to do the basic action of that role. So you are basically betting on whether or not somebody is going to pick certain roles, and you want to grab that role first because you want the bonus, but you want to make sure that the role you need also gets selected by somebody else, but you want to do them in the right order so you don't get stuck. If somebody chooses the role that lets you ship off goods for points, you want to make sure that you've already selected the role that let you put those goods on the ship first so that your goods get shipped off when everybody else's do, so you score points also. It's a game that involves almost zero luck, which is among the sort of board gaming community, that's a high praise indeed when a game can be pure strategy and no luck. But the downside of that is a lot of people, because this game has been out a long time, has been played by many, many people a lot. A lot of people consider it having been figured out. Like, you know, if I do something, then you definitely have to do this other thing because that's the way it goes. But if you play it with a group of novice players that aren't privy to that, it's still really, really fun, and it can lead to some really wonderful interaction. And it's a game that people can wrap their head around relatively quickly, but it also has some really complex mechanics that show people that board games can be a lot more than what they probably had thought up to that point. So I own two copies of Puerto Rico. I own the sort of collector's edition with the metal coins because I love it so much. And I also own the regular standard edition Puerto Rico game. Is this a game you've played before, David?
Yeah, of course. It's a classic. Yeah. It's a great, great game. I'd also say that even if you're not a board game guy, you don't have four people to come over your house or whatever and play frequently, it's a great pickup on iPad.
Yes.
So the AI aren't brilliant, but they're good enough to have a really good time with the game.
Yeah, and I see Ultra Nerd here in the chat is bringing up San Juan, which is another fantastic game. It's Puerto Rico done as a card game, so it gets rid of the board and all the chits and everything, and it uses cards as both the resources and the actions. It's really quick. It's really easy to play. You can play it with two people relatively fast and without lots of setup. So San Juan is also something I'd recommend as well.
Yeah, it's another great game.
Cool. What else? Anybody else got any? You got any last things you want to bring up, Christian, before we wrap this show up?
Strider is currently free on PlayStation Plus for PS4. It is a flawed but fun game. I think the flaws are are small comparatively to what it could have been. If you are a Strider fan or looking for something to play, I think PS Plus continues to be a great value. Xbox, you know, Games for Gold is becoming an increasingly better value as well with the changes they made after E3. And I think, again, I'm going to keep harping on this. If you're sitting there, if you're sitting there without anything to play, go in and see what you might have missed that maybe you have to auto-download that are sitting there to play. And the good news is, if you don't like it after an hour, you can stop playing it because you already paid for it, right? You pay for the service. So get in and get out. And totally unrelated to video games. Totally unrelated to video games. A friend of mine had a scary situation this past couple of days. And it's just a reminder, everything is fine. He's great. But if you live with roommates, put somewhere your contact information, your health insurance number, your parents' phone number, any allergies you might have, and any medications you might be taking. If you live with roommates that maybe don't know you that well, it's a weird place to do it. We have enough listeners on this show, and I think it's important that, you know, my friend's life was maybe saved because we were able to find that information and get it out there. So, you know, take a minute, pause your game, go write down the important stuff and make sure people that live with you know where to find it. Because in the day of cell phones and locked cell phones and, you know, what's your mom's number? What's your best friend's mom's phone number? You don't know it, right? It's not the same. So just a little moment to take the time to do that. And we'll all be a little
so
bit
two
safer.
PSAs today, insurance information and cell phone number, and don't go see anything that has Transformers on the name. So
both equally important.
David, you've been such an awesome guest. Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. I had fun.
Tell us when can we get our hands on Fable Legends?
So we're going to start up beta. We've said, quote, in the fall. We've, of course, been sneakily playing with it. If you ever were to follow me on Xbox, you can see we're playing a secret codename project sometimes that in our evening times or daytimes too, actually. And so we've been testing it out to make sure all the service side stuff is all working and that our servers can handle loads of people playing. Feel free to follow me on Twitter and ask for more information, and I'll no doubt publish more information. We're going to be in our multiplayer beta, so we get all the balancing and tuning stuff done this year, and then we'll be releasing a full game later than this year.
Okay. I think that, you know, unfortunately, forgive me if this is, you know, whatever, but I think Fable the Journey kind of unfortunately took the franchise in a place in people's heads where they might discount it more than they should. I think if people aren't looking at this game, I think that they're making a mistake, because while it isn't that, as you said, mainline Fable RPG necessarily, it is a really cool concept. I was having fun right away. It's a game that, I mean, even if you weren't here, as you weren't when I talked about it earlier, I would be saying pretty darn good game that people should have their eye on.
Yeah, thanks. The other thing I'll say is that if you are going to be in San Diego in a couple weeks, feel free to give us a look up there. We'll be playable there. And, of course, in Cologne in a couple months, I guess.
Yeah,
Gamescom. Now, we will be down there on the show floor showing it off to everyone.
Very cool. And did you mention your Twitter already, or did you want to do that?
Yeah, I'm just simply my last name, at Eckelberry, Eckelberry. And feel free to ask me anything anytime.
Very cool. Christian, what are you up to this week?
Jeez, I don't know. Things that you can do. I mention it, but sometimes I just breeze over it. I do a stand-up comedy podcast on the Nerdist Network called What's New. Comics do new material, and then we sit down and talk about what worked, what didn't work, our writing process. If you think you might be interested in stand-up comedy or seeing, you know, the ingredients that make the sausage, I think it's fascinating for that perspective. And it is at What's New Show on Twitter, and it's What's New with Christian Spicer. You can find it on iTunes or wherever. And then this Thursday, I'll be doing improv versus stand-up at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater here in Los Angeles. It's a show I created and co-host, and we have a great improv group called Odd Man doing improv. And then it's the Walsh Brothers, who have a show on Comedy Central Digital right now, just fantastically funny stand-ups. And Theo Vaughn, whose half-hour special came out, it was probably 2 years ago now, but if you are old, you also might remember him from Road Rules and The Challenges way back in the day. But after that, he went out and built a very credible and amazing stand-up career that relies on none of that. It's not like celebrity DJ Theo Vaughn. Like, he went out and did real work for a little bit and then said, you know what, I'm going to be a stand-up. So that's this Thursday in Los Angeles. If you're around, come check it out.
Cool, man. We love hearing from you. You can always email us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. We've also got that subreddit that you can submit stories. And my Twitter handle is @JeffCanada with two N's and one T. I'm on the Slash Filmcast as a regular every week. You can get that over at slashfilm.com. And Anthony Carboni and I are doing something new. It's some weird thing that we've put out a few episodes of. Give that a listen. Check that out. You can find links to that in my Twitter feed as well. And I think we're going to do some more of them this week. And hopefully you guys dig it. That's going to do it for this episode. Thanks again, David, for being with us. Thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to Squarespace for the sponsorship. And until next week, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.